20 years ago, Donovan Taylor was expelled from the priesthood of Cytira for heresy. As a Cytiran, I'm sure you've heard about it, Jonan offered, gesticulating dismissively with one of his bound hands.
Certainly, Lydia said. He claimed that because our gods were once mortals, our priests should aspire to achieve godhood themselves. The viewpoint gained some popularity among his contemporaries, and his superiors in the priesthood most likely saw it as a threat to their control. He published an essay on the subject, and he was excommunicated shortly thereafter.
Jonan raised an eyebrow. He had been expecting more religious fervor. The spectacled man shook his head to clear his thoughts.
Yes, precisely, he said. Excommunication robbed Donovan of many of his friends, allies, and resources. He left Velfrin and traveled for a handful of years, eventually making his way to Keldris. That was where the priesthood of Valian took note of him.
Talion looked up from nibbling on his bread, gave Jonan a brief quizzical look, and then went back to eating.
Donovan Taylor was in Keldris to beg for a meeting with the city's ruler, King Haldariel. Taylor sent word that he had discovered something of vast import. Knowing that Donovan was a former priest, Haldariel wisely invited one of our priests to the meeting to help evaluate Donovan's claims.
Lydia nodded.
I take it Donovan was insulted?
Jonan shrugged.
I assume he was, but the meeting didn't end explosively. From our priest's report, Donovan claimed he had discovered the source of the power of the gods. He planned to make himself a god, and he offered godhood to Haldariel in exchange for protection until he could complete the process.
Talion nodded along, looking interested in the tale, while Lydia's expression began to darken.
And what did Haldariel say?
Talion asked.
He refused, naturally, Jonan replied. The claim sounded preposterous. Our priest assumed that Donovan was attempting to hide from Cytirian assassins and hoping that the king's protection would deter them.
The paladins of Cytira don't have assassins.
Lydia grimaced in distaste.
Jonan shook his head. Regardless, Taylor was clearly afraid of someone, if not from the priesthood. Perhaps he had made other enemies.
Power rarely comes without conflict, he noted, pausing to invite her to dispute his point. Lydia simply half-nodded thoughtfully, brushing a stray hair away from her eyes.
Continue.
Donovan pleaded at first, but when it was clear the rejection was final, he departed from the city. Over the next several days, a half-dozen Rethri were reported missing. No bodies were found, no ransoms demanded. By the time someone thought to connect the disappearances with Donovan Taylor, his trail had long vanished. Those Rethri were never found, Jonan explained.
The Rethri were a people with no sclera, or white portion in their eyes. It was commonly debated among scholars whether or not Rethri and humans were the same species. While their eyes were the only way to reliably tell a Rethri apart from a human on sight, Rethri biology had some other distinctions. The most well-known of these is that each Rethri had a strong connection to a single dominion, and that this connection was reinforced during a secret coming-of-age ritual. Rethri were as common as humans in Liadra, where Jonan spent most of his life, but he had never seen one of their coming-of-age rituals.
And you believe that Taylor took these Rethri to use in some sort of sacrificial sorcery?
Lydia inquired.
Jonan nodded. Yes, but only because of recent events.
Let me explain.
Go on,
Talion urged him, picking up another slice of bread to eat. There was an odd gleam in the swordsman's blue eyes, a hint of interest that had been absent when the conversation started. Jonan took a mental note of that, wondering what had aroused the man's attention.
It was about 2 years later that Orlan, which had never previously been affiliated with any of the major religions, proclaimed that the city had a new official religion. King Osric claimed that he had been visited by a new god, Adon, and that he would be the city's patron deity. When Osric passed away, the then-queen Tylan became the queen regent. Osric and Tylan had a son, Byron, but he was just a baby. He couldn't legally take the throne. The city has been always strictly patriarchal, so even with Tylan ostensibly ruling, Adon's influence has grown steadily over time, Jonan explained.
And Adon's new religion espoused a belief in ascension through worship, that anyone could become a god through sufficient service, Lydia added, similar to what Donovan was attempting to encourage as a priest. I've seen the connections drawn between the Adonate religion and Donovan's treatises before. It's not an uncommon subject of discussion. The key difference lies in that Donovan claimed that people should seize their own path to divinity, whereas Adon's religion was more about him offering godhood directly to people who pleased him.
A better business model, to be certain, Jonan said with a grin. We believe that Donovan eventually came to the conclusion that he could use his discovery, whatever it was, as powerful leverage. King Osric most likely accepted the offer that King Haldariel refused, or maybe Tylan did and had her husband killed. After all, now she is worshipped as one of the four gods of Orlin.
Talion finished a piece of bread and rubbed his fingers together over the plate, ridding them of crumbs.
That makes some sense. But why are you investigating this now? It sounds like your priesthood had this information years ago.
Jonan nodded.
About 7 months ago, Adon paid a diplomatic visit to the city of Sullier, another city in Rethri territory.
I've been there, Talion said with a nod, drawing a dubious look from Lydia. What happened during the visit?
Adon visiting any other city was unusual enough in itself to warrant attention. Part of the key to Adon's claim that he deserves worship is that he actively watches over his people, tending to the sick and performing miracles. For that reason, he rarely leaves Orlin, or at least not publicly, or for extended periods of time, Jonan began. Adon offered to extend his protection to the city, claiming that he would assign Myros, his god of battle, to be their patron if they adopted his faith. The city council refused, their ties to Valian running far too deep. Adon left shortly thereafter, but not alone. Lydia tapped her fingers against the table.
There were Rethri disappearances again, she surmised aloud.
Precisely. And more of them this time. Nearly 20 citizens disappeared.
Obviously, this could no longer be a coincidence, and a thorough investigation was launched. As I'm certain you know, the priests of Valian have a military branch, which we call the Thorn Guard. Among the Thorn Guard, there are specialists in many types of sorcery, including tracking and information gathering. They found no evidence of kidnapping. Rather, it appeared that these Rethri picked up and left the city without telling a single body. They were, of course, headed for Orlin.
So this Adon was recruiting followers among the Rethri, then? Talion asked.
Possibly, but not by simply talking to them. The Thorn Guard managed to catch some of the Rethri on the road before they reached Orlin. The people the Thorn Guard talked to refused to give their reasons for heading to Orlin, claiming it was personal business. The Thorn Guard checked for signs of thought sorcery, but they didn't find any. Adon wasn't traveling with the Rethri, and there were no signs of any kind of conflict having occurred. So the Thorn Guard went back to Sullier to report, Jonan explained.
The Thorn Guard simply let the Rethri go to Orlin? Talion asked.
Jonan nodded.
There was no evidence that they were being coerced, and the Thorn Guard had no legal authority to act outside of Kessite lands anyway.
Did the Rethri travelers show any indications of new wealth?
Lydia asked.
Jonan furrowed his brow thoughtfully.
I don't recall anything about that in the report. It's a good question, though. I doubt they were just being paid to go to Orlin. The families seemed universally unaware of the spontaneous traveling, with the exception of a couple cases where family members were traveling together. If it was just about money, there would be no reason for such secrecy.
Interesting, Lydia mused. Very interesting.
It gets better still. After the Thorn Guard returned, we sent a diplomatic party to Orlin. The city of Orlin claimed that none of the Rethri we listed had been registered as citizens in the city. One of our ambassadors tried to arrange for a meeting with Adon, but he was turned away, Jonan explained.
Lydia nodded. I remember hearing about an ambassador from Sullier being in the city, and I wondered why, but he left in such a hurry that I never had a chance to meet him myself.
And so, Jonan said, folding his still-bound hands together in front of him. I have been sent to investigate these disappearances. We have no conclusive evidence that the Rethri are being sacrificed, but it seems to be an answer that provides a unified answer to multiple questions.
Does it, though?
Lydia asked.
People have been trying to research methods of achieving immortality for centuries. At least 5 other sorcerers in our time have found ways to extend their lifespans.
although the two members of House Theas may be using the same method.
Lydia paused, grimacing.
Frankly, as gruesome as it sounds, sacrificing lives to fuel your own is one of the most obvious things to attempt. The priests of Lysandry have a tradition of asking a sorcerer to try to transfer their remaining life to another when they are dying, for example. Numerous methods have been attempted, and none of them have produced any measurable results.
Manipulating scholars of sorcery is so much harder than dealing with civilians, Jonan considered, measuring his words carefully.
Certainly, I agree with you. I am not claiming this is the only possible answer, merely one probable one. Consider the possibility that Donovan discovered a method of transferring life, but it is simply very inefficient. Perhaps it only extends his life a single year for each person he sacrifices. It may also require Rethri specifically, since they live much longer than humans.
Lydia shrugged.
That's not outside the dominion of possibility,
she admitted.
But you still have several key gaps in your information. You have established that Adon and Donovan have a similar but not identical ideologies. Rethri disappeared both when Donovan visited Keldris and when Adon visited Sullyr. Those are strong similarities of circumstance, but they do not confirm that these two are the same person. Perhaps Donovan shared his secrets with his Adon, and Adon either helped him or stole whatever methods Donovan taught him.
Jonan cracked his knuckles.
That is absolutely possible, since they are both male and appear to be of similar ages when Adon first appeared. It simply seems easier to assume they are the same person until we find evidence otherwise. We have no records of Donovan Taylor being anywhere else after Adon appeared. Do you?
Lydia shrugged.
I can't say for certain without consulting our records. I don't have quite everything memorized.
Jonan chuckled, assuming Lydia was being hyperbolic. But she didn't join him in his laughter. After a moment of awkward silence, Jonan blinked and righted his thoughts.
Of course. Well, if you do have a chance to check any records, that would be most helpful in the investigation. I have not precisely agreed to help you yet,
Lydia reminded him. Talion glanced at her.
You would consider abandoning these missing Rethri to whatever fate Adon has in store for them?
Jonan mentally thanked Talion for his innocence. Lydia sighed pointedly, looking back toward Talion.
You can't take everything this man is saying as God-spoken.
She turned to Jonan.
No offense intended.
Of course, Jonan said, waving his bound hands dismissively. By all means, confirm my claims on your own. In fact, I'd prefer it. I always try to do the same myself.
I wouldn't even know where to begin, Talion admitted, his hand floating to the hilt of his sword.
It didn't seem to be a hostile gesture, or even a conscious one. Jonan surmised that it was a nervous gesture, and the weapon comforted him.
I have contacts and records I can consult, Talion,
Lydia offered, adjusting her glasses.
Your priority should still be to exit the city as quickly as possible without detection.
Talion shook his head.
I will not bend on this matter. I need to find Eric Torrent before I leave the city. Perhaps he can even provide us with more information on this Adon. He is, as you have both noted, a renowned scholar. Now that I have disguised the weapon, I should be much less conspicuous.
Actually, Jonan said, I'd really rather you not bring anyone else into this. If you want to find your scholar, that's great. But if you do find him, please don't consult him unless I ask you to. I'm entrusting you with very sensitive information here. If Adon discovered that I was looking into his method of obtaining his power, it could easily get me killed.
Jonan gave Lydia a meaningful look.
I have no intention of turning you in, at least not immediately,
Lydia said.
If your motive is truly to investigate disappearing civilians, I have no objections to cooperating with you for the time being. Your investigation, however, is not my primary concern.
She turned to look at Talion.
If you insist on staying in the city, we will have to find you some new clothes and make you a cover identity.
Jonan scratched at his chin.
You know, Lydia, you keep mentioning that Talion should be leaving the city. Aren't you at even greater risk? If you just broke him out of prison, people are probably looking for both of you, and you will be more easily recognized.
Lydia shook her head.
The people in the palace would have just seen me walking around with Istvan, which is perfectly normal. Istvan himself is a bit of a risk, but I've taken some precautions with him. He's always been reclusive. I don't think he'll go to the city guard or the sorcerers, even if he suspects I was involved in the prison break. The evidence in the jail cell will look like Talion broke his chains, which wouldn't require an accomplice. And I never had the key to his cell.
Jonan briefly pondered how she had gotten into the cell without a key, but it wasn't really relevant at the moment.
It's a risk. You're right. But it's necessary. I'm not going to leave Talion alone here.
Talion frowned. You don't have to take any risks for my sake. Now that I'm aware of the situation, I can take care of myself. She gave Talion a conciliatory glance.
I'm sure you're a very competent swordsman, but you have to understand that the sword you're carrying is the single most important object to my faith. Leaving you alone in the city with the Sekhes would be unforgivable, especially considering Miros is going to be looking for you.
Jonan's eyes widened at that. Miros? What? Why?
One of the sorcerers called him in. He should be here within a few days.
I don't like saying this, but you probably should both just leave in that case, Jonan mumbled.
Valian, curse it, why can't things ever be simple? Miros getting his hands on that Sekhes would be colossally bad.
Why are you so concerned? Is Miros known for some sort of divine tracking capabilities or something similar? Talion stretched his neck from side to side.
Lydia shook her head. No, he's the local god of battle. It's not that he's known for any particular type of sorcery. If Miros arrives and you haven't already been caught, he's going to throw the entire city's resources at finding you. I might be able to slow that process down somewhat, but Jonan is right. We'd be smarter to leave before he arrives.
Talion tightened his jaw. Fine. I don't like it, but we can plan to leave before Miros arrives. In the meantime, we can help Jonan and look for Eric Taran.
You'll still need a way to avoid notice in the meantime. The house we're staying in belongs to a man about your size, Jonan offered. You can probably fit into some of his clothes.
Are those really yours to offer? Talion inquired dubiously. Jonan nodded.
Yes, everything here is at my disposal.
Very well, then, Talion said. I suppose we should free your hands.
I'll do it,
Lydia said, surprising Jonan. He had not expected her to agree. She moved gracefully over to him and began fidgeting with the knots.
You can just cut them,
Jonan offered. I have other rope.
No need to be wasteful,
Lydia insisted, continuing to work at the main knot.
Just to be clear, Jonan asked, do you both agree to keep what I've just explained to you a secret?
Sure, Talion said. I can keep a secret.
For the time being,
Lydia agreed.
If I think I can gather more information by revealing a portion of it, I may need to do that. Lovely. My head is going to be on a pike by this time next week. I can avoid telling people that you are the source of the information if that would ease your mind,
Lydia offered. Jonan nodded hastily.
That would be preferable. Who are you planning to talk to? The other court sorcerers may have information on Adon's rise to power. Some of them have been here many years longer than I have,
she explained. Jonan turned his head to the side inquisitively.
You're still planning to deal with the other court sorcerers? Shouldn't you be avoiding them as much as possible? Let me worry about that,
she said, flashing a grin, pulling on the end of a rope and undoing the last of the knots all at once. The ropes came free into her hand. Jonan flexed his wrists gratefully. Jonan locked the door to his bedroom. He had instructed his guests on where they could find everything they might need for the evening, and to knock loudly if they needed him. Sighing in exhaustion, Jonan walked over to his bed, pulling down the covers. He sat on the bed, adjusted the pillows, and lay down for a few moments before standing back up. Shaking his head, he walked around to the other side of the bed and adjusted the sheets further. After a moment of examination, he walked away, contented, tapping a finger on the mirror on the table beside his bed. With that done, Jonan stepped back to the middle of the room, lifting a heavy rug that covered a section of the wooden floor. He couldn't see the trap door that he had just uncovered, but he knew the location of the invisible latch from months of practice. He flipped the latch and opened the door, stepping down onto the stairs to the room below. On his way down, he grabbed the corner of the rug and the handle on the top of the trap door, dragging them back into position as he advanced downward.
With the trapdoor closed, the chamber was pitch black. He tapped the right side of his head with a finger. The gesture was all he needed to cast a familiar spell, enabling him to see perfectly in the dark room. His sight restored, Jonan locked the trap door and headed down into his real bedroom. The room was about the same size as his false bedroom above, but barely tall enough to stand in, and far more cluttered. A dozen tall mirrors lined the walls, and a smaller bed, as well as a writing desk and chair, took up much of the remainder of the chamber. Jonan walked to a mirror on the right side of the new bed first, tapping a finger against the surface. His reflection vanished, the mirror showing instead an image of the room above, the vision of the mirror's twin. He gazed into the image for a moment to determine if the mirror was still sitting at a good angle to display the entire chamber, nodding in satisfaction as he concluded that it was. He briefly scanned each of the other mirrors, checking to see if anything significant had changed. Of the 12 mirrors, 9 were currently active. 5 were used to communicate with contacts that he had established since coming to the city. Only one of these contacts was affiliated with the Order of Valian in any way, and he didn't even know where they fell in the organization's web of members and mercenaries. The Order of Valian itself consisted of priests of Valian, but, like most of the largest religions on the continent, they had several other organizations in their service. The Thorn Guard was their military branch, and comparable to the paladins of Taos in function. Each of the Vaykes also had their own servants, some of whom were formally employed by the priesthood. The two most famous of the Vaykes were Aara, the Lady of Thieves, and Jacinth, the Blackstone Assassin. Legends depicted the pair as both rivals and lovers, always seeking an advantage in contests that lasted for centuries. As a child, Jonan had found these stories entertaining, even romantic. Now, with personal experience as a piece on their game board, he found nothing compelling about contests waged atop a field of corpses. It was an open secret that the Order also employed a branch of spies and assassins who were informally referred to as Blackstones, named after the title that Jacinth used. Finally, the Order also employed numerous uncategorized workers, everything from stonemasons to build temples to blacksmiths to scribes. Ostensibly, Jonan fell into this last category, employed as a glassblower. In reality, he was just a somewhat better concealed spy for the Thorn Guard. He suspected his contact in the city was probably similar, someone who wouldn't be found on the rolls for the Thorn Guard, but was in their pay and service. His other contacts in the city were numerous. Only the most significant warranted mirrors for constant communication. These included a palace guard in the High Palace, the location where the Queen Regent herself resided, as well as 2 information brokers that often provided conflicting information, a former apprentice to one of the court sorcerers, and a woman who claimed to be an officer in a local guild of thieves. He privately suspected that one of the 2 information brokers was actually the real Thieves Guild representative, and that the guild member he was speaking to was in the broker's employ. But he could afford to pay them both and let them play their games. Valian's coffers were in no danger of running dry. "Tired," he considered, "but I have a letter to write." Jonan sat at the writing desk, picking up a fresh piece of parchment and dipping a quill in one of the nearby inkwells. After a moment of consideration, he drafted a simple message. "I have the prisoner. Establishing trust. Identity still uncertain. Paladins of Taos involved." He kept the letter brief. Jonan liked to sound mysterious. Half-smirking in amusement, Jonan moved the quill and picked up the parchment, blowing on the ink softly in an effort to dry it faster. After a few impatient moments, he picked up the message and placed it directly against the surface of the mirror directly to the left of his bed. He stepped out of the mirror's sight. His contact could not know his identity, and tapped the surface of the mirror. There was no visible sign that his spell had taken effect, and as always, he waited a few moments before tapping the surface again. The delay was unnecessary.
The image of the letter had been sent the instant he had touched the glass, and the image would remain frozen in the twin mirror now that he had disabled the spell. He just liked to wait a few seconds. It made him feel more comfortable that the sorcery was going to work, since he had no way of visually discerning if it had done anything at all. With the message sent, Jonan picked up the letter, carefully tearing away the portion on which he had written the text. He hated wasting good parchment. It had been a rare luxury when he was a child, and he had never broken the habit of reusing the pieces of the paper that had not been written on. Putting the blank piece on the table, Jonan tore the inked portion to shreds. He would burn the pieces later to be thorough, but it was important to dispose of his communications immediately, just in case he was somehow discovered.
Valian, sometimes I really wish you'd give me simpler assignments.
The majority of what Jonan had told Lydia was true, but he had deliberately omitted the specifics of his actual mission. The missing Rethri were the catalyst for his assignment, but not the goal. Adon and his religion were a growing problem. Jonan's responsibilities were discovering how Adon was faking his godhood, and then solving the Adon problem by whatever means were necessary.
"I'm not an assassin," his own words echoed in his mind. "Though by the end of this, I very well might have to be."
He wiped his ink-stained fingers on a well-used rag and retreated to his bed, exhausted. His vision had been reduced to a blur by his rapid uses of sight sorcery, but it hardly mattered. With a tap against the left side of his head, Jonan's vision went black, and he crawled his way beneath the covers to sleep. Chapter 4. An Attempt at Teamwork. Talion woke to find Lydia sitting in a chair near the door of their guest bedroom. She had a book sitting on her lap, but she had turned toward him seemingly instantly when his eyes blinked open. There was already sunlight creeping in the window to his right, indicating that he had slept too long. He mumbled, sitting up.
"You could have woken me."
Lydia nodded sleepily.
"I could have, but it looked like you needed the sleep more."
"And you probably still don't trust Jonan not to slit your throat in your sleep."
Talion grabbed his sheathed weapon from within the sheets and pushed himself out of the bed, walking over to the nearby dresser. Jonan had indicated the clothes inside would most likely fit him, so he set the sword atop the dresser and began to search for something to wear.
"I can take over watch as soon as I'm dressed," he said without glancing back toward Lydia.
"That won't be necessary," she replied. "As soon as we've had a chance to speak to Jonan about our plan of action, I'll head back to the palace and sleep in my own room."
The swordsman frowned. Lydia's constant suspicion and distrust about everything was starting to get frustrating. He found a suitable pair of trousers and a light brown tunic, pulling them on. The trousers were a little bit short, but still a considerable improvement over wearing the robes Lydia had given him. After another minute, he also managed to find some clean socks, slipping those on as well. His legs were still a bit sore from the greaves he had worn the previous day, and he resolved himself not to make any more clothing out of metal until he was better at making complex shapes. Fastening his belt around his waist, he turned toward Lydia.
"How do I look?"
he inquired, striking what he thought was a dashing pose.
"Like a peasant wearing a sword three times too expensive for him to own," Lydia said dryly. "But still, an improvement."
Talion scoffed. "I doubt anyone will be paying me too much scrutiny, now that the sword looks ordinary."
"It doesn't look precisely ordinary. The pommel is far too large, and the scabbard stands out considerably as well. Why is it lined with metal?"
the sorceress asked. Talion grinned. "That's a trade secret." Lydia rolled her eyes in response.
"Very well. But it would be best if I'm well versed in your capabilities if you expect me to continue to protect you."
Talion folded his arms across his chest. "I'm grateful for your help, but I don't need protection. I'm fairly well trained with a sword. If you want to work together to investigate Donovan, that's great, but I
don't think you're taking this seriously."
Lydia narrowed her eyes.
"I didn't just mean protecting you physically. Not every problem can be handled by a sword.
You're going to need help if you want to find answers before you need to leave the city.
The swordsman grimaced, opening his hands and closing them again.
Fine.
I'll answer some questions, as long as they're not about the sword. Lydia quirked a brow at that.
Why won't you answer questions about the Sakess?
Well, for one thing, because you refer to it by a proper name. My knowledge about that sword is what makes me worth anything to you. If you think you know all my secrets, that makes me expendable.
Lydia shook her head vehemently. Absolutely not. If you have the sword, there's probably a good reason for it. If what you told me before was true, and you've had the sword for many years, I refuse to believe that the gods would have allowed it to remain with you unless it was intended for your hands.
Talion blinked. That was a stronger reaction than he had expected. He had known she was religious. She was a paladin, after all. But he didn't anticipate that she would have incorporated him into that viewpoint so quickly. He briefly debated arguing that the sword had been taken away from him easily enough, but he quickly realized that the argument would only serve to weaken his potential leverage over her.
How can you know? How can you believe your gods had a hand in anything without any evidence?
Lydia brushed a lock of hair away from her eyes.
Most paladins would say something about faith. I've never found that quite sufficient. The gods can't be everywhere or do everything, but that sword is both a symbol and a powerful tool. They have a vested interest in keeping track of it, and saying they have significant resources would be an understatement. I don't have direct evidence, but I can still reason out that it's terribly improbable that they don't know you have it.
Okay, he managed, still somewhat stunned. Why do you think I'm supposed to have it?
There are numerous possibilities. I haven't had an opportunity to narrow them down yet. The sword was historically wielded by Aindarin, the leader of our pantheon. Members of the Taos pantheon rarely appear in person. They often act through intermediaries. Perhaps you are one of his descendants, or just a chosen mortal intended to serve as an example to his followers. It's also possible you were selected because you have a high potential for martial prowess, and Aindarin has a particular task in mind for you.
Talion nodded absently. He had heard the same hypotheses before, and considered them himself. He found it considerably more likely that his biological parents had simply obtained the sword on their own, and decided to give it to him for some reason. The idea that his real parents had something in mind for his future was far more palatable than being a game piece for a deity he had never met.
That's exactly my problem. There are too many possibilities. And how do I learn what might the plans of the gods themselves be?
He sighed.
Maybe they know I have it and just haven't decided to do anything about it yet. You said yourself that your gods rarely appear in person. Why is that, by the way?
Lydia contorted her lips, apparently considering her response.
The Taos Pantheon may have ceased taking a direct role in mortal affairs, but that doesn't mean they would ignore something as significant as who is holding a sacred artifact. If they didn't want to come claim the sword themselves, they could send a paladin or a priest. I've never heard the voices of the gods, but some of my fellows claim to have.
She paused for a moment, taking a breath.
As for why the gods don't appear in person, there are a few reasons for that. The Taos Pantheon are not the first generation of gods. They were mortals once, like you and me. Unless you're very well read, you probably haven't even heard the names of the older gods, except for Valian, of course. If the histories are true, the older gods took a much more active role in the world. Their reward? Delson was killed by his own children when he attempted to stop them from warring against one another. Cair Danael sacrificed herself to save a mortal city from a foreign god. Records on the others are scarce, but it's fair to say that they either fled or died.
Lydia looked down, shaking her head in frustration.
We can't be trusted to deal with the gods directly. Time and time again, mortals betray the gods that serve them. The Taos Pantheon has taken a safer path. They guide us from a distance, and give us the strength to protect ourselves in the form of sorcery. Valian's followers call it cowardice. I consider it a good long-term strategy.
Talion scratched at his chin. Didn't sorcery exist before the Taos Pantheon?
Of course, but it wasn't anywhere near as prevalent. We don't know exactly how the gods work, but each god appears to be able to grant particular types of sorcery to mortals who were born without any talent for it. This is colloquially referred to as being given the gifts of the gods. Some gifted humans demonstrate sorcerous abilities that are beyond what a traditional sorcerer is capable of. One of my mentors has a gift from Cytira that allows him to completely nullify sorcery in a specific area.
That's pretty impressive.
That makes some sense. I can see why people would want their gods to be physically present, though, which must be why the local religion is so appealing.
Of course. Who wouldn't want to meet the deity they worship? It's an appealing idea from our perspective, but from the perspective of the true gods, it would not be worth the risk. Even Valian, the oldest and most powerful deity still living, rarely appears without an entourage. And history has recorded more than one failed attempt to assassinate Valian, at least one of which was by one of his own children.
All right. I can see why your gods might not be making any big public demonstrations, then. But how am I supposed to know what they want me to do without any guidance? Talion shook his head. I need to find this Eric Tarin. My parents were insistent that he could help.
I understand your desire to learn. I am a Cytiran, after all. But please, be patient. If I ask you to leave the city for your own safety, I need you to listen. I want to know about your connection to the sword, too. It could be one of the most important discoveries for my religion in 100 years. I will look for Tarin, even if you have to leave.
Her expression was soft, her eyes pleading. Talion turned his head aside. Fine, he conceded. I'll leave if it looks like Myros is going to arrive.
Thank you.
She beamed a smile at him.
Now, where'd you learn how to cut through fire with a sword?
Oh, that? I grew up near Sullier. When I was 10, I was sent for sorceress aptitude testing. My parents wanted me to deliberately fail, but I was too proud. My performance earned me 6 years of mandatory military training. Since my proficiency was with metal sorcery, most of my training involved learning how to use spells to augment my sword work.
The practice of taking children away from home like that is barbaric. Your parents must have been furious. How old were you?
Talion shrugged. I was 10. Honestly, it wasn't so bad. My parents were upset, sure, but they had gone through the same thing when they were young. I hated it for the first couple years, but I learned skills I never would have back home. Never thought I'd be thankful for all those hours of running, climbing, and sparring. About 4 years in, they transferred me to a Thorngard facility for more advanced training. Most of the students there were older, and it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that the majority of us would end up as Thorngard. I finally had a chance to pit myself against some stronger opponents. One of my fellow trainees was a talented flame sorcerer named Neris. She had a spell that surrounded her with a whirlwind of fire. During our training matches, I couldn't even get close enough to swing a sword at her. After losing a couple humiliating bouts, I developed a strategy. He raised the Sekes and ran a finger along the metal rim of the scabbard. I already could manipulate metal that was touching other metal, and I had a minor talent for flame sorcery. I spent months practicing trying to sense and move a fire just by touching it with metal. Eventually, I succeeded. Neris still throttled me in our next match, but at least I managed to startle her. The swordsman gave a deep laugh, raising a hand to his lips. That girl was a beast. Anyway, I loved the fighting, but I hated the philosophy the Thorngard were always drilling into us.
That's interesting. Lydia perked up a bit. You didn't like the Thorngard's philosophy. What about it?
My parents had raised me on stories of heroes working together to accomplish things they couldn't on their own, or sacrificing themselves to save their allies. The Thorngard drilled it into us to focus on getting the job done. We had training exercises designed to get us to learn to leave wounded allies behind. It made me sick. The sorceress smiled.
I can understand why you'd have an objection to that. The Taos philosophy emphasizes preserving life.
I know. My parents are Taos worshippers. I assume that's why Eric brought me to them specifically. Rethri followers of the Taos Pantheon are rare.
I don't think you mentioned before that you were raised by Rethri.
Lydia quirked an eyebrow.
Didn't I?
He shrugged.
Well, it didn't really matter to me that they were Rethri, or matter to them that I'm not. In any case, the worst part about the Thorngard training was that it worked. I knew what the exercises were designed to do, but I went along with them anyway. It took one of my friends being seriously injured to get me to stop and reassess the situation. Even then, I had to stay until my 6 years were up. My commander tried to convince me to stay, but I couldn't stomach any more of it. Of course, just because I was finished with my mandatory service didn't mean I was completely out yet. I was in the reserves for another 4 years, going back periodically for more training. They tried to recruit me permanently every time I visited. A knock sounded on the door. Lydia's hand immediately dropped to her sword, but Talion just glanced toward the room's entrance.
"Good morning," he said. "We're both awake. You can come in."
The knob turned, but the door didn't open.
"It's locked," Jonan's voice said.
Lydia took a deep breath, relaxing her grip on her weapon and moving to flip the lock a moment later. As the door opened, Lydia stood up, nodding to Jonan. He looked exhausted. His hair was disheveled, and he looked to be wearing a much thicker pair of glasses. Normally, Talion wouldn't have paid much attention to the spectacles, but these were both broader in frame and thicker in the glass to such an extent that they dominated the appearance of his face.
"Morning," Jonan said. "Care for some food? It's the non-poisoned kind,"
he said with a wink at Lydia. Talion put a hand over his stomach and grinned.
"Sounds tasty."
Lydia nodded.
"Yes, thank you. We can discuss business while we eat."
Jonan shrugged mildly at that, turning and leading the way down the stairs to where they had held him captive the previous night. He had apparently moved a few things around while Talion was sleeping, and now three chairs sat next to a table that was no longer cluttered with panes of glass. Talion took a seat immediately, but Lydia remained standing a few feet away while Jonan retrieved plates and food from his cupboard nearby. It was simple fare, dried meat, cheese, and more of the same bread from the previous evening. Even so, Talion was grateful for anything to eat after several days on the road and much of a day in the Adelan room.
"Thank you for feeding us," Talion offered as he began to fill his plate.
Lydia sat awkwardly a few moments later, looking like she had judged that the plates were not currently planning to assassinate her.
"You're welcome,"
Jonan said, fetching a set of wooden mugs and a large clay jug of liquid.
"It's water,"
Jonan said meaningfully to Lydia, and she gave him a curt nod in reply. While Talion began to eat, Jonan retrieved one last thing, a large swath of parchment, and unrolled it in the center of the table. It didn't quite reach where he was sitting, but Talion glanced at the parchment and realized it was a map of the city with several locations circled. Talion examined the map, but he wasn't familiar enough with the city to recognize most of the circled locations. The city map was divided into six sections. The Old City was a roughly triangular section that stretched from the southern city wall to near the city's current center. There were multiple circled buildings here, including the Low Palace and the Grand Temple of the Spear. Near the top of the triangle was the entrance to the Nobles' District, an hourglass-shaped section with a large circled structure, the High Palace, north of the center of the hourglass shape. The Merchants' District encompassed a large portion of the northeast side of the map, starting from around the center of the hourglass. Talion noted several circled structures in that area, but none of them were labeled. The Craftsman District was roughly opposite of the Merchants' District, but considerably larger, and the buildings appeared to be more densely packed together. Talion took that to mean that craftsmen were considered lower class than merchants within this particular city. He guessed that the distinction involved craftsmen making products directly, whereas merchants, more than likely, were involved in selling finished goods. South of the Craftsman District was the Mining District, a smaller area that was similarly densely packed. There were no circled buildings in that area.
Below the merchants' district was the workers' district, which encompassed the largest portion of the city. The city gate where Talion had entered was located in the workers' district, although he noted other gates in the old city and the nobles' district. He kept those locations in mind in case he had to flee the city. From the layout of the city, he guessed that he had been imprisoned in the Low Palace and then headed north with Lydia into the nobles' district.
"What's the relationship between these circled locations?" Talion asked.
"These are places that I suspect the Rethri might be held. I started with a much larger list, and I have been narrowing it down over the last several months," Jonan explained.
Lydia quirked an eyebrow at Jonan.
"You've been spying at these places for months without getting caught?"
Jonan shrugged.
"I haven't actually managed to get inside everywhere personally. Mostly I've been gathering information through other sources." "If that's the case, what is your degree of confidence that the places you've already disqualified are not holding the Rethri?"
Lydia asked, a hard tone of disapproval in her voice.
I am fairly confident. My informants are very good at their work, and if anything was particularly suspicious, I inspected it as best I could. Admittedly, there have been some locations I have not been able to access extensively, which is why they remain circled here,"
Jonan explained. "So you need our help," Talion concluded. Jonan put a hand to his chin, leaning on it against the table.
"Your help would, well, be helpful. In the fullness of time, I suspect I could get access to all these places by hiring more assistants. I believe we might be running out of time, however, if we haven't already. Hiring trustworthy people for subterfuge is tricky business. I've had to be very careful preferring contacts that have worked with my priesthood before."
"I'd like to help you," Lydia said in a conciliatory tone. "But I have other things I need to be investigating, and I've already jeopardized my cover by helping Talion escape. I'm willing to do some of my own research, but I can't be caught working with you."
Lydia ran a finger across the map, tracing a path between the various circled locations. It was obvious she was thinking, so neither of the men interrupted her.
"What was your methodology for selecting these locations?" Lydia asked.
Jonan nodded, as if confirming some thought in his own mind, or perhaps acknowledging Lydia in some way.
"I started by researching the areas in the city with the highest degree of security. The two palaces, the High Temple, the prisons, some of the universities, and some of the manors of the wealthiest nobles. That was a long list, more than 30 locations. So I consulted with multiple contacts about each of them. I didn't provide a full list of everywhere I was investigating to any one person, nor did I provide them with what I was looking for. I just asked which places would be good or bad to hide a large object of high value."
Jonan took a breath and then continued.
"If multiple contacts agreed that a location was badly suited toward hiding something, and I agreed with them, I cut it off the list. In most cases, these locations were disqualified because they were too public. I was only able to cut a few items off the list that way, but it was a start. From there, I began to hire established contacts that our priesthood has used in the past to investigate specific locations. I asked them to find any areas that looked like they had restricted access. Places warded with obvious sorcery, for example, and report that back to me. Over the course of months, these contacts investigated all of the locations to the best of their ability. I visited many of them myself, crossing off false leads."
He hesitated a bit, his expression darkening slightly.
"Debating how much to tell us?"
Lydia asked.
Jonan sighed deliberately, giving her a pointed look. "You're still a court sorceress here. Even with what I've already told you, I'm sure you could dismantle my plans with ease, and you might have to in order to preserve your own cover. The more I tell you, the more vulnerable I make myself."
Lydia smiled, pushing her glasses further up her nose.
"I could sabotage you, yes, but I don't plan to, as long as you're telling me the truth about your goals. Your cooperation helps you in a couple of ways. First, it helps convince me of your competence and sincerity. Second, if I do decide I need to get rid of you to cover for myself, it makes it more likely I'll be able to finish your work without you."
Jonan sighed, lifting up his hands in a gesture of surrender.
When you put it like that, I suppose I don't have much of a real choice.
Talion glanced at Lydia, keeping his expression neutral.
Would she really even consider turning someone in to protect herself? I didn't think the paladins of Cytira did things like that. Maybe I'm just being naive, though. She's not like a storybook paladin in most respects.
I have a cover identity, Jonan admitted. This house belongs to a member of our priesthood, and I'm using the identity of his son, Travis Case. I pretended to be on the lower rung of nobility, selling expensive glassware as my way of expanding the family's fortunes. He gestured at a corner where he had stacked some of the slabs of glass that had lain on the table the night before. I have some little minor actual experience at working glass, and the family name has been sufficient to help me sell a few pieces here and there.
Lydia looked over at the glass, and then back to Jonan, a look of surprise crossing her features.
"You're dominion bonding the glass," she realized aloud.
Talion gave Jonan an appraising look, considering that. Dominion bonding was a notoriously difficult process. It involved saturating something with a dominion, permanently changing or augmenting the target's properties. From what he had heard, something could only be safely bonded to one dominion at a time. Rethri were well known for being born with a kind of bond to a specific dominion. They strengthened this bond during a coming-of-age ritual, and that somehow drastically slowed their aging process. He wasn't familiar with the details. He had been told that dominion bonds did not work on most humans. Something about their bodies prevented the bonds from taking hold. Ancient artifacts, his sword included among them, sometimes had runes on their surface called dominion marks. Each mark appeared to contain a bond to a dominion, and different marks bestowed different effects. Through the use of these runes, artifacts could be bonded to multiple dominions at the same time, allowing for more complex and powerful effects. His mother had spent years trying to decipher how the marks on the Seikes had been made, but she claimed to have had little success. Talion guessed that his weapon carried multiple marks tied to the dominion of metal, at least one to make it sharper and one to make it more resilient to damage. He had memorized the appearance of each of the marks, but while he had found pictures of the runes in several texts, none of them had ever been able to explain their exact functions.
"Only the gods still hold the secret of forging dominion marks,"
his mother had told him.
"The last sorcerers with that knowledge perished long ago."
"How does that work?" Talion asked. "I've never seen a dominion bond created."
"There are a few different ways to do it," Jonan explained. "It depends on what you're trying to accomplish and what you want to bond. In my case, I've found a way to mix dominion essence of sight with ink. It's very time-consuming, but eventually I can make ink that's sufficiently saturated to make a weak bond. Once I do that, I write my signature on part of the object with the ink, the pedestal or the backing of the mirror frame or that sort of thing."
Sight. Of course. That's what Lydia must have realized before. We already saw that Jonan could make himself invisible. He can do a lot of other spy work with that kind of sorcery.
"Very impressive," Lydia admitted. "I've never heard of dominion essence of sight being successfully held in a liquid state."
Her second statement sounded more skeptical, but she shook her head wearily. She was looking more exhausted by the moment.
"All right. I'm satisfied with the explanation of your basic methodology for now."
"Excellent," Jonan said. "The palaces," he said, pointing at the low palace, "have had far too many guards for me to get access to most of their secrets. As a court sorceress, however, you should have largely unrestricted access." Lydia nodded.
"If there were a bunch of Rethri being held prisoner in the Low Palace, I'd probably have noticed by now. But I'll certainly take another look, and I haven't spent as much time in the High Palace."
"And you'll let me know if you find anything?" Jonan inquired hopefully.
"I'll consider it,"
Lydia said, tilting her head as if to look downward at him, even though he was slightly taller than she was. Jonan gave the slightest look of irritation and then straightened himself.
"Very well, then." He glanced at Talion. Would you be willing to help me take a look at one of the more heavily guarded facilities?
Talion considered that.
He wanted to help, but his only experience with stealth was in a forest environment, not an urban one. He didn't know the local culture or customs, which had already proven to be nearly disastrous.
"Which one would you want me to help you with?" he asked noncommittally.
Jonan pointed at a particular spot on the map instantly, not far to the right of their current location. "This one, Talior and Castle Depository."
Talion nodded. "You think this Talior family is just a tailor with a slight change to make it less obvious?"
"That sounds a little too clumsy," Lydia interjected. "Changing a couple letters is hardly a cover."
Jonan shrugged.
"From what we've gathered, Donovan Taylor wasn't a very subtle man. He was arrogant and egocentric. Taylor might not even be a change to cover the identity of the family. They just might have changed it when they rose to nobility to avoid sounding like merchant-class citizens. It's not uncommon. My own family name, Kestrian, is based on the word equestrian. The family changed it when they were successful enough to move into other business."
Talion nodded at that. "Why do you need my help?"
"Ah, that's the fun part," Jonan said with a grin. "I managed to get inside. It's not a very big facility, at least compared to the palaces. I found a Dominion-bonded door."
Lydia perked up at that.
"That's fairly unusual, but it could just be where they store their valuables."
Jonan nodded. "It might be, but the room seemed too big for that. From the position of the door and the location of the surrounding rooms, I'd say it was the size of a large bedroom. But that isn't the only suspicious part. I've seen Dominion-bonded doors before. I have a spell to see through walls. When I see that type of thing, I just look through the adjacent walls. It didn't work. In fact, I was temporarily blinded."
"What would cause that?" Talion asked.
"They must have bonded the walls inside the room, too," Lydia explained. "And with a type of Dominion bond expressly designed for preventing spells like yours," she said to Jonan. "You're right. That is suspicious."
Jonan nodded. "I was hoping you could cut through the lock," he said to Talion.
"What makes you think I could do something like that?" Talion asked.
"Well, with the sacred sword," Jonan began, gesturing at the sword on Talion's hip.
"Huh. What'd you do with it?"
Did Jonan somehow not notice what the sword looked like this last night? It's looked like this since before we met him. Which means...
"What makes you think he's carrying the Sakas?" Lydia asked, folding her arms.
"He probably saw me when they first brought me in," Talion offered.
Jonan nodded in agreement.
"There was a pretty big crowd that came to watch when they escorted me over."
"Or he can see through the scabbard," Talion considered. "If he can see the runes on the blade, altering the hilt design, it's almost irrelevant."
Lydia clenched her jaw, looking dissatisfied by the answer, but she didn't say anything. "I have no experience at hiding in an urban environment," Talion admitted. "But if you explain your plan and it sounds plausible, I will do what I can to help you.
And hope this isn't all just some kind of cover to steal something valuable out of a heavily protected room."
Lydia stood up suddenly, a hard expression on her face.
"Very well, then. With that decision made, I need to report back to the palace and make some excuses."
"Shall we meet back here in the evening, then?" Jonan asked.
"No promises," Lydia said. "I need to protect my identity, first and foremost. If I can slip out tonight, I will. If not, it may be another day or more before we can converse again."
Jonan nodded. "Very well. Good luck," he said. Lydia looked slightly rankled, but she nodded curtly to him, and then turned to Talion.
"Don't get caught. I don't think I can protect you a second time."
Talion nodded. "Don't worry. We'll be careful."
"This is going to be a mess,"
Talion realized. He stood with Jonan across the street from their target building, a solid-looking two-story structure of gray stone. A broad sign proclaimed it to be Talior and Castle Depository. The building was located in a residential area, not exactly where Talion expected anyone to hold a group of Rethri prisoners. He was not, however, an expert on the subject. He was beginning to doubt that Jonan was an expert, too. The dawn fire still shined brightly overhead, which seemed to be precisely the wrong time to infiltrate a building, and Jonan hadn't given Talion any hints about their plan yet. He assumed it involved trying the same invisibility spell that Jonan had been using to follow him earlier,